Primetime replay from Money FM 89.3.
Not the greatest start to the trading week for many markets across the Asia Pacific, with most indices closing in the red and the Straits Times Index also taking a bit of a step back today. But there is one notable exception in the region, that is markets down under. In fact, the ASX 200 defied the downturn today and closed in the green. Today on Primetime, we are joined by Mr. Shane Oliver. He is the head of investment strategy and the chief economist for AMP Capital down in Sydney, Australia, to give us a better idea of what is driving sentiment there and why markets seem to be a bit more resilient this Monday down under. Mr. Oliver, thanks so much for joining us and good afternoon.
Thank you. Good afternoon.
All right. So, Mr. Oliver, as we mentioned a while ago, I mean, this isn't just a small bump up for the ASX 200. It seems they're up by about 0.7% for Monday. And in stark contrast, we're seeing it across the rest of the region that seems to have been spooked again by trade uncertainties and other issues that are affecting market sentiment here. Is there something extra in the coffee out in Sydney that seems to be making investors down under a bit more confident, whether they be in New Zealand or in Australia right now?
Well, Australia does have good coffee, and I don't think that's really the explanation. I think there's a bit of an ebb and flow here. Our market underperformed somewhat last week. Increasing concern over the Reserve Bank won't cut interest rates as much. It tended to lag the rally we've seen in global markets, particularly in Europe and the US and Japan. And so maybe there's an element of catch-up. It's interesting to note that our market was pretty flat on Friday, for example, whereas other markets had gains, and to some degree the rally we've seen today is bang on in line or slightly just a little bit more than what was flagged by futures trading on Friday night as Wall Street managed to rally. So I think it's really just a catch up that our market had underperformed a little bit in recent weeks, lagged behind some other markets. US market at a record high, very strong gains coming out of Europe and Japan, and we've sort of played a bit of catch up to that. Obviously, the trade issue is still ongoing. That's going to have lots of ebbs and flows as we come into some potential signing. It was supposed to be this month. Looks like it's now going to be next month. But it does seem to me as if the pressure is on both sides more so today than it has been at any other time in the last 18 months to actually come up with a deal because of the economic circumstances, I guess, are more difficult than they were, say, 18 months ago. So I think the local market in Australia is just sort of looking through any short-term noise, playing a bit of catch-up. That's what I'd put it down to, rather than anything fundamental occurring in Australia or New Zealand.
Well, the latest developments with regards to the US-China trade tensions right now is that US President Donald Trump has said that though talks are going slowly but surely, they haven't really committed to roll back tariffs on the part of Washington. It seems that sentiment is changing almost all the time, and there's still a lot of uncertainty with regards to whether or not they can sign off on the interim trade deal. Do you think this is going to be the theme towards the end of the year, Mr. Oliver? And how can markets prepare themselves if this is going to persist, or this uncertainty and seesawing sentiment with regards to the interim trade deal, if this will continue at least until the end of 2019?
Well, I guess it's just something investors have to get used to. To some degree, you could argue it's been an issue now for the last 18 months, this uncertainty. My take on it is that they just proceed as normal. In fact, I'm feeling a little bit more upbeat about things because I think that pressure is on both sides, China and the US, to actually try and resolve this issue. It's a lot more intense than it was, say, a year ago, when there was some hope that it would be resolved, but it kept failing. Whereas now, I think President Trump needs good news, given the issue around his impeachment trial and all of that, and of course the election in less than a year now. He wants to get reelected. He knows that American presidents don't get reelected when they let their economy slide into recession and unemployment rise. So I'm feeling a little bit more optimistic about things. And likewise, when you look at economic indicators globally, there are some very tentative signs that maybe they're bottoming out. Some of the PMIs have been a bit more stable lately. They're business surveys, basically. Some of the business surveys have been a bit more stable lately after the fall seen earlier this year. We have seen significant monetary easing by policymakers. That's what's made this year very different to last year. Last year we had the trade war, but central banks are either considering tightening, or actually were tightening in the case of the US. So this year has been very different to that. And you know, when you look at some of the commodity prices around the world, they're looking a little bit healthier as well. Copper, for example, the oil price looking like some sort of low might have been found, which I think all of those things taken together would actually be positive and consistent with economic growth starting to pick up as we go into next year. Now, of course, the big uncertainty around all of this is the trade issue, but as I mentioned, I think that there is some reason for optimism that they will come up with a deal. At the end of the day, it has to be the two leaders who sign off. That's why Trump is saying, well, he hasn't agreed to anything yet. Mm-hmm. But the reality is that if he wants some deal, if he wants this out of the headlines, if he wants some positive news on trade, then he's going to have to make some compromise.
And do you think that he actually might be forced to do that? Do you think this is just a bravado on his part before he ultimately signs the deal, or just last-minute grumbling before he puts pen to paper?
I think there's an element of last-minute grumbling there. I mean, if you think about it, you know, China, I mean, the point of putting the tariff, if you look at it from a sort of a game theory point of view, the whole point of putting the tariffs on were to then get some concessions out of China. So it stands to reason that if China makes some concessions, that you should wind some of the tariffs back. So that makes logical sense. I guess it's a question of which tariff increases you wind back and by how much. And there's obviously quite a lot of debate about that. I think we're still at very early stages here. This phase one deal, and they're saying it's going to be three phases. This phase one deal will be, I think, see only pretty modest concessions on the part of China. And therefore, any tariff rollback will ultimately be fairly modest as well. But the key for market, I think, is to remove that uncertainty that tariffs will just keep going ever higher. I think that was the big problem here. When you kept ratcheting the tariffs up, notably through August and September, that's when markets started to get worried again that there's no end in sight to any of this. But if it sort of toned down a bit and we could be confident that they're not going to go up anytime soon, at least for the next year while the US election occurs, then that gives us a little bit of breathing space for markets. And that would be my base case. And then at some point over the course of the next year, they start on the phase two negotiations, and maybe that leads to more significant change on both sides. But at the moment, I think the best we can hope for is a fairly modest deal, but at least it stops further tariff increases, and we see at least those tariff hikes that were going to occur in December not occur. I mean, that would be like America shooting itself in the foot. I mean, President Trump would be shooting himself in the foot if he raised tariffs on a whole bunch of consumer goods coming into Christmas ahead of a year where he wants people to like him. I mean, people won't like him if he does that.
Mm-hmm. We're still speaking to Mr. Shane Oliver, the head of investment strategy and chief economist of AMP Capital out in Sydney, Australia. Shane, one thing I want to give our listeners at least a clearer idea of is how this might impact the Australian market, particularly the mining sector there. If there is a slowdown that's either trade induced or not trade induced, this could impact demand. We're seeing it actually impact, for instance, iron ore, the demand for iron ore, and also we've seen iron ore prices start to fluctuate. Also, we've seen at least demand come and go for gold miners down under. Also, just how tricky or how complicated has it been to trade the mining space out in Australia, given some of these factors that are being affected by geopolitical events and perhaps safe haven demand as well?
Well, it has a huge impact. The material sector, obviously, in Australia's case, is dominated by resource companies. And the big miners are the dominant players there, BHP and Rio in particular. And they're very dependent on demand for things like iron ore. This year has been a little bit complicated because the iron ore price surprised on the upside going into the middle of the year, into June, July. And that was on the back of a supply outage for Vale in Brazil because of a dam failure. So that overly inflated the iron ore price. It got to well above $100 a tonne. Recently, we've fallen back towards $80 a tonne. I think the Singapore price was about $82 a tonne on Friday. So that's partly due to the resumption of supply from Brazil. Whereas if you look at other commodities, they're actually looking a little bit healthier because they haven't had these supply distortions. My take on it would be that if the trade issue sort of goes on the back burner for the next year or so, as a result of the phase one agreement between the US and China, then that ultimately would be positive for demand for commodities, because then you could start to see a pickup in global growth, which would support commodity demand. And then the question becomes, well, to what degree will that be offset as Vale returns to more normal production? But on balance, I would conclude, yeah, well, there might be a bit more downside in the iron ore price, but it probably wouldn't be a lot. Alternatively, the trade talks fail and the world economy deteriorates further, then it's a different scenario. The iron ore price has a lot more downside in that scenario. But my leaning is towards things turning out okay in 2020. I reckon what we've gone through is something like the growth slowdown we saw in 2015-16. A lot of that was led by China, whereas about the US and so on, talk of another global financial crisis, or GFC as we call it down here in Australia. And it turned out to be okay. Central banks took their foot off the brake, put it back on the accelerator, and growth picked up. And I think we're going to see something similar as we go into 2020.
Okay. And finally, Mr. Oliver, before we let you go, I do want to get your outlook on the Australian dollar. It has been rather weak, actually, or challenged over 2019. But we have heard from the Reserve Bank of Australia that if there is any easing on their part, it might have to wait until 2020. Could this be the the relief, or at least a temporary relief for the Australian dollar after suffering from quite a year of weakness?
That's right. I think what happened there was that as we came into this year, suddenly the market realised the Australian economy wasn't so strong after all, that the next move in interest rates is down, not up, which if you go back a year ago, the consensus was the next move in interest rates was up. That turned out to be wrong. At the time, I actually thought it would be wrong as well. We came to the view that the Reserve Bank would have to cut interest rates this year. That realisation on the part of the money markets as we went through this year has pushed the Australian dollar lower. Now we're getting, and then as the year progressed, we got to a low, I think about a month or so ago, maybe early October, where we got to around 66.7 US cents. Then I think investors start to realise, well, you know, other central banks have been cutting interest rates as well. We've had more easing from the ECB. We've got another rate cut from the Fed, which we saw a few weeks ago. And therefore, it's no longer the one-way bet for the Australian dollar that it had been for much of this year. And lately, we've seen the Aussie dollar sort of stabilise around just below 67 cents and actually head up to around, or just below 69 cents, currently around 68.5 US cents. So my base case is we probably do have a bit more downside in the Aussie dollar, maybe down to 65 cents, but I think we've seen the worst of it. And I think as it becomes clear that it's not just the Reserve Bank easing here, it's other central banks easing as well, then the Aussie dollar will bottom out. And as we go through next year, I think the risks will all sort of shift to the upside as commodity prices and indeed global growth shifts more to the upside. So I think we'd either come very close to the bottom for the Australian dollar, or you know, there may be a bit more down, or we've seen it. You know, we'd either come close to the bottom or we've seen it. I think the next big moves in the Australian dollar are more likely to be up rather than down.
Right. And it seems that 65 cents to the greenback might be the line in the sand, as long as things stabilize, it seems. We'll have to leave it there. But Mr. Shane Oliver, Head of Investment Strategy and Chief Economist at AMP Capital, thank you so much for joining us this afternoon.
My pleasure. Have a great afternoon.
To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg or download the SBH radio app available on Google Play or the App Store.
Thank you for your time, sir.